Hello, hello, welcome. Boom, moderate that. What's going on, Darren and Patty? What's going on, Rishi? Hello, friends. Welcome. Give us a moment to load up and find a nice cozy seat.
Looking forward to this conversation about feeling alone on the spiritual path. I think it's something that a lot of us struggle with, so it's going to be nice to go into this concept in more detail. So I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
All right, now we are linked up. We are topicked up. We got friends in the stage. We got friends in the audience. This is looking good. All right, Rishi, you feeling good? Everything's going all right on your end?
Everything is good. Looking forward to the conversation.
Awesome. What's going on? Oh, we got a bunch of cool people up on the speakers. As usual, this is the Spirit Lounge. Feel free to raise your hand if you feel like you like to come up to the stage and contribute. What's going on, Michelle? Been a while. Hope everything is well. We are going to get in tonight about the topic that we ran this back way, way, way long ago, in the early stages of Clubhouse, feeling alone on the spiritual path. And I think it's a very important thing to constantly remind ourselves. And I think it also builds up on some of the previous rooms we had. You know, last time we spoke about relationships not being all good vibes, that there's bad vibes too. And this idea that, you know, we are on a spiritual path, kind of taking a journey for ourselves. So this loneliness topic, being alone, solitude, all these things kind of blend in, and we're going to get into it tonight. As usual, we'll start off, you know, I want to dial it back a bit. And Rishi, we have Rishi here. He is a monk in the States. I pinned a link to a class that he is now developing. So if you feel compelled, feel free to head over to that link. You'll get some more information, introduction to yogic philosophy. Very beautiful. I definitely recommend, tapping into Rishi's knowledge when possible. What's going on, Dr. Renee, Nicole? What's up, David? And we're going to dive into this in a way, you know, we're not trying to just find the right and the wrong, but develop and break this concept down. Look at it from a few different angles and find out what kind of things we can all take away from it and gain from it in a meaningful way, instead of just determining, you know, is it good to be alone or do you need a bunch of people? So I want to dial back as usual in this conversation, and we're going to pretty organically make our way hopefully over to aloneness. And I think, Rishi, you know, I'd like to start it off with you. And ask you this question and see how we can get back to some of the core principles that we speak about a lot in the Spirit Lounge. And so I guess a simple question, maybe not simple, but the one I'm going to ask you first would be, why do we as humans, why do we develop this loneliness? Or why do we sometimes seek being whole, wholeness, and we're developing being alone as if we are not whole?
Thank you, Antonio, and it's lovely to see Michelle and Dr. Renee. It's been some time since we've connected, so lovely to have you here, and also the other moderators, Karen and Casey and Nicole and David as well. So this concept of why do we feel alone? So a lot of times when we look at it from a Vedic perspective, we know there to be three eternal truths. So you have something called the divine. And through the divine, sparks of that self has been created. And these sparks are each one of us. So we are each one of these, what we call souls or atmas that come forth from the divine. And for us, we perceive and feel that the divine is whole. And this world that we live in, the relationships, the atmas, all of the things that are happening are all coming from the divine. So in reality, the only thing which is whole is the divine. The only thing is complete in its love is the divine. The only thing that is the embodiment of truth is the divine. And everything else comes forth from it. So in many different rooms, we talked about how this is life is a stage, right? Where we come here for a moment in time, we forget our true nature, and we have these experiences. And then once again, we reconnect it to the divine. And the mistake that happens is that when the soul comes into this world, it takes on an ego identity. And the ego makes us forget who we are. And so in this forgetfulness, we try and seek to go back to the whole, but rather than looking to the divine, we look to the world. So inherently we understand, and inherently there is an impulse for us to constantly be back to the whole. We want to always go back to the whole. We want to be connected to the whole. But the mistake that happens is that we perceive that that wholeness can be found in this material world. So feeling of being alone, feeling of wanting to be complete, this is not a bad thing, right? When somebody wants to be complete, when they want to be with somebody, when they want to find their soulmate, these are not bad things, because inherently the soul is longing to go back to that wholeness. Are you following me so far, Antonio?
Yeah.
So in that way, the soul is longing to go back to the wholeness. But what do we know? What can we understand? That wholeness can only be found in the divine. So that the issue that we make is that we are trying to find the wholeness in something which is not whole, because only the creator, if you will, the divine, can be whole. Everything else is a part of it. So the soul is looking for the whole in the incomplete. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Beautiful, Rishi, and thank you everybody else for joining up here. And so Rishi, that, you know, it's kind of hard, it becomes a little difficult to wrap our minds around this idea of a completeness that is, we can't really put our finger on. So it's easy to understand how we may look in the world that we can see something that's very directly relatable. You know, we can touch the world, I can pick up a rock, I can go to a mountaintop and feel like I am actually alone, like I'm, you know, separated. I mean, I guess to still stay on the principle level, we've mentioned this before, and you brought up this idea of the ego, kind of this separation from this wholeness, from the fullness, as the Gnostics used to call it, the pleroma, the fullness. And I guess my question, you know, on that matter is, why do we get into a situation, why would our soul adopt an ego in order to make us forget, or kind of to feel this separateness?
So, as we said before in the previous rooms, the ego is not good or bad, right? Many people view it as something bad. The ego has its purpose, and the purpose of the ego is to make us forget our true nature for a moment in time, so we can have these experiences in this world, and at some point, once again, connect back to the whole. So that's the main purpose of the ego. Without the ego, we'll never experience duality, because we understand that everything is the divine. So there can never be a play, right? Romeo and Juliet can never happen if the actor does not choose to play the role of Romeo or Juliet. So the ego helps in that process. So it's not good or bad. And what the ego wants, actually the soul wants. The ego wants to be happy. The soul wants to be happy. The ego doesn't want to be alone. The soul doesn't want to be alone. So in the same way, there's actually not a lot of difference in what the ego wants and what the soul wants. But the minute difference, and the most important difference, is that the ego tries to find these things in the world, while the soul is searching for it from a transcendental perspective. So deep inside, the soul knows that it's longing to be whole, but it cannot be whole in this world. Nothing in this world can make it feel whole. Only the wholeness can make one feel whole, And but the ego, it tricks us into thinking that we can find this wholeness in the world. So we look to be in relationships. We constantly look to attach ourselves to this world because we think those things will make us whole. That's why we have terminology such as twin flames, soulmates, because it's this idea that we are trying to find that one thing in this world that can make us feel complete. And as long as the ego has the reins, we'll always search for it in the world. As long as the ego is in control, we're always going to look for it in the person. We're going to look for it in Tom, then John, then Bobby, then whoever else, right? And we're just going to go from one person to another, trying to find something which is very difficult to find in this world.
Beautiful point, Rishi. Beautiful point. And this idea is really, it's really awesome to take a step back and think the ego and the soul, they're both trying to do the same thing. Like you mentioned, find this union. One though is looking in the physical world and one is looking in the metaphysical world. And I think it's very true. The more focus we are on trying, and this has come up in many a spirit lounge, that we think, oh, if I got this next job, I'm gonna be happy. If I go and I gotta get a girlfriend, and then I'm definitely gonna be happy. And then you get the job, you get the girlfriend, and guess what? It sucks too. And then you're like, wow, I wasn't that didn't even help. And then we move on to the next thing that we want. And then so the ego is kind of exhausting itself, looking in a place that it can't find this kind of union or completeness. And the soul is like, hey, stop worrying about that stuff and let's go inside. Let's look a little deeper. So I think it made me think about this comparison, and you had teased it a little bit about relationships. Do you think there's a validity or a truth, or is this what's happening, that when we seek, can we be trying to reenact this longing for union, transcendental union with the soul, with the fullness, when we're having, when, are we reenacting this same longing of union in a physical relationship? If I'm grabbing somebody, if I'm kissing them, I'm literally hugging, squeezing them, I'm trying to unify myself. And if we get a little more explicit, we are unifying. Do you think that this is a physical representation of a non-physical, of a spiritual activity that we're going through?
Absolutely. Before we get into that, just another thing to understand is that the quality of the whole is that it always exists, right? It cannot decay. It cannot go away. It's always there. It's always whole. It's always complete in itself. But this world, what do we know about this world? This world is constantly changing. It's constantly changing from one thing to another. Nothing stays consistent. So in that way also, the ego is trying to find and be whole in an ever-changing landscape. That is why when we obtain things like relationships or jobs or other things, they are constantly, they slip through our hands. It's almost like trying to hold on to water in the palm of our hands. We can hold it for a little while, but then it goes again. And so there's a beautiful saying that the unreal can never come into being, and the real never ceases to be. This is the conclusion of those who have seen the truth. So in this way, what this is saying is the unreal can never be the complete whole. Everything that is happening here, it's going and it's coming. But that wholeness is always existing behind the veil of illusion. So that wholeness is right here, it's right next to you. But because your ego is so caught up in the sense objects of this world, you don't perceive it, you don't see it. So when it comes to relationships, what happens is, let's look at the act, the sexual act itself, right? What's happening? In the act itself, it's two beings trying their hardest to come together as much as possible. So what is that impulse? It's the impulse of the ego to be in communion with the whole, but it's mistaking that that person will provide it, right? So we see this in that very act, that very raw act. There is this impulse of the ego to be in wholeness with somebody else. But this longing to be whole is also happening at a transcendental perspective, right? So the soul is wanting the same thing. It's trying so hard to once again feel and be in communion with the divine. But because the ego has sort of taken over and the soul has sort of gotten to sleep, we're in it, we're interacting that divine play in the material world, right? So the divine play is the beautiful play between the soul and the divine of this lover and beloved relationship. So that divine play is trying to be acted out in the material world by two egos. So that is the issue there, right? And just as a caveat, it's not a bad thing to want to be with somebody. It's not a bad thing to want to have sexual intercourse. I'm not saying any of those things. Enjoy it. But also understand from a deeper perspective, don't become attached to it because it will never give you that happiness that you're looking for.
Thank you, Rishi. And I think that is an incredible point to bring up. And I do, we have some heavy hitters up on the stage. I do want to tag up you guys. And it reminds me, Rishi, of looking a little bit at my own personal journey, that in the beginning I felt like I needed to find somebody else to even just share what I learned. I needed to go tell somebody. But now, as an older man, I'm more wanting to hold my own truth inside and tell it to myself. And be able to go inwards as opposed to having to find, let's say, someone who just says, yeah, I'm totally on the same page as that. So, very interesting topic. I want to thank everybody for coming out. This is the Spirit Lounge. If you haven't already, you can head over to the page. We have Rishi up on stage. He is a monk in the States. As I said before, he has Introduction to Yogic Philosophy pinned up at the top. You feel like you want to sign up for that. And I want to get into some right away into the some of the mods. We got Michelle and Dr. Renee. I want to ask you both first. Any of your ideas, of what we brought up so far about being alone on the spiritual path, your own personal journey. If you had anything you want to add in, or perhaps even just something that you've learned from being alone. Michelle, if you'd like to go first, the mic is all yours if you want to share.
Thank you so much, Antonio. So good to be here with you and Rishi and Dr. Renee. It has been a while. It's been, lots of different things going on with the different times for everybody since Northern Hemisphere went on to winter time and we went on to summertime. But it's really nice to be here, and what a great discussion, and lots of thoughts were coming up around what you were just discussing, Rishi and Antonio, and the way that in my lineage, the way that I was brought up was that we're never alone, but that we don't, as Rishi was expressing, we don't find it through just constantly seeking out that, the perfect job, the perfect relationship, and so on. And in fact, I think that to have a really a good relationship, a satisfying relationship, we really have to remember our own wholeness, that if we're a spark of the divine, if that's what's within us, then surely, that is wholeness, that the soul itself is whole. That doesn't mean that it can't keep developing, expanding with experience, which I think is, part of what we're doing here. And I feel like for me, my soul is constantly cracking the whip and driving me through the vales and valleys of life experience. It's the rebel in me driving me to, yeah, go over there and check that out. It doesn't matter if it's uncomfortable. In fact, the more uncomfortable, the more My soul is determined that that's the experience that I'm going to have and grow and develop. Because when things all feel peachy, maybe we're not expanding and developing as much as we could. But in my tradition, the Gaelic tradition, you know, we have an ancestor who comes through the doorway of life with us. So we have a guiding spirit, which is still a physical or rather human experience, but it's in the what we call the unseen or the other realm. So we have companions, spirit allies, that really are there for us to tap into if we listen to the voice of our heart, because that's how we really get in touch with those energies. And I do think one of the great challenges is to remember the wholeness. And despite the fact that the world is constantly changing, I think Mother Earth herself is whole. And because I think you can have wholeness that still encompasses change. And I know this is a big discussion and so much to be said, but I really feel that the task at hand is to remember. And one of the things when I felt after the death of my first husband, and I think death really is the thing that totally confronts us about, are we alone? When we remember, like, I didn't die, my husband died, I'm still here, I'm still me. But the journey is the within journey. To, as Rilke said, to go out, you've really got to go in to get out there and experience the picture. And that is definitely the spiritual teaching of my family, that, you know, the inner world, the inner journey is where we connect most profoundly to our soul, to our true essence. And within, we can find the answers, because we're really connecting to the divine that dwells within. And people often ask me, and I don't want to take up too much time, but I will make this point, that where I live, don't I get lonely? What do I do all day? Don't I feel strange not living in community? For me, no. I need to live away from people. And I never get lonely, because I'm surrounded by the elements, all the other animals that live here, the tree, all the spirit beings, the stars, the ocean, everything. And I have the space, the spaciousness around me to feel that interconnectedness with the rest of life. And so I'm very much filling my days, not trying, but there's so much going on around me all the time that I just feel brimming with life. And I know that's what I personally am here to experience. It's about the experience of life itself. And perhaps I think, you know, like as Rishi was describing, it's a journey back into wholeness, or remembering wholeness. And I'd really love to have, you know, that aspect of the discussion to deepen into that. Perhaps we can circle back to it, but I'll leave it there for now. Thank you
Michelle. You know, you brought up a good point that the wholeness can still be seen and experienced in this world, and I completely agree with you that Mother Earth is whole in herself. But a lot of us, we don't see that bigger picture, because we're so caught up in the day-to-day things that we only see the ups and downs. We see the transparency of life. And so that is the issue. There's a beautiful verse in Vedic tradition. It's a mantra, actually. I'm sure most of you have heard of it. It's the Om Purnamada Purnamidam mantra. And why we chant this mantra, it's a beautiful definition behind it. It means, what is visible is the infinite. What is invincible is also the infinite. Out of the infinite being, the finite has come. Yet being infinite, only infinite remains. And so when we start to reflect on it, we see that, yes, this material world has come from that infinite being, but it is infinite in itself as well. But only because we are clouded by the ego are we not able to perceive it. And so a lot of times in the Vedic tradition and a lot of indigenous cultures, finding the infinite, finding the divine can happen right here in this world, right? Because it clearly states in this world, the infinite also resides. So it's not that we have to go somewhere when we die to experience the divine. No, it can happen right here in this world. But we have to change our perspective and how we view the world, with what lens are we viewing with. And that's the important thing to understand. So thank you, Michelle, for your insight.
Thank you, Michelle and Rishi, for that response. Michelle, you brought up this incredible point too about your relationship with the natural elements, with other animals, with spirits that are around us. And I think that's something I want to also get into as we unfold this conversation, you know, our ability to connect with spirit guides and with greater forces that are close by and not just in some distant realm in the cosmos that we think is so detached from us. Beautiful point, Michelle. Dr. Renee, I want to ask you the same question, and then I'm gonna ask Rishi another question, and then perhaps we can get into David and Nicole and some other friends up on stage here. Dr. Renee, you know, is there anything that you would like to chime in on this idea about being alone, or perhaps some benefits you've found to being alone, and what it, how it's impacted you on your spiritual growth?
Well, thank you for having me. It's such an honor to be here. And Michelle, I've missed you so much. I'm sending her a big giant hug from down here. I know we've been separated for a while. And oh my goodness, this topic couldn't be any more poignant in my life than this past year. And I know that many of us can sit here and say, yes, the last couple of years, if ever there was a time, did we ever come to that full understanding of what it really meant to be in our own space, to not have the capacity to move at our own will, to not just jump into those things that we used to jump into in the past to avoid these feelings. You know, as a traditionally trained psychologist, you know, turned spiritual psychologist, it's been a really journey of my own, it's an unraveling for me, because, you know, I know growing up with such a spiritually bound father, there was always this connection that I had as a young child to something greater than myself. But I always had my dad by my side. And I don't think that until he left the world, as I've shared many times, even in this space, did I ever come to know that vastness that really existed for me. And I know I've been, you know, very candid about this and with Rishi as well. I think I mistakenly thought that vastness was everything heavy and dark and you know, negative for me, versus really being able to be rooted in that, that when my father left in his human form, you know, my human brain and its limitations mistakenly determined that that was loss, and that was heartache, and that was pain. And, you know, and I think that in the Western culture for me, as I've navigated my own spiritual journey for the last, you know, 13 years, a big part of the remembering for me has always come back to that. How is my own brain setting me up for the issue that creates that belief that loneliness is more than it actually is? And so I've always lived in this contradiction in a way for a really long time, knowing something different, but then my mind would bring me back to its limited fashion, saying, no, you're sad, Renee, you're lonely, you know, you need someone to fill this space for you. You have to run and tell someone like you, Antoni. I always had to run and tell people what just happened or to celebrate my successes. But, you know, the last probably 3 or 4 years, and particularly this last year for sure, as Michelle knows, has been one that if someone looked at my life, they would perceive it with significant loss. but for some reason I feel different this year. And I really do. And I think it goes back to what Michelle really taught me this year and Rishi really supported me in, was that idea of the spaciousness that Michelle talks about, that beautiful capacity to create not only space for ourselves between people, but space within ourselves to not feel so afraid when that vastness shows up unwillingly, because it will. You know, I won't be mistaken again to believe that that's something that's painful and hurtful and full of loss, instead of being a greater story of the life cycle and the remembering that I am part of something much bigger than I ever imagined. And so not being in a relationship, not being rooted in a lot of the other things that I used to do, I have spent a lot of time just with me this year. And, you know, my children, you know, being in a divorce situation, I don't have my children 100% of the time anymore. And so that vastness opened up when they weren't here all of the time. And I remember that first night just crying and crying and sobbing. And I was like, what am I crying about? And I recognized again that I was back in that pattern of believing that something had left me versus realizing what was trying to embrace me in that moment, which was, you know, what Rishi just mentioned, that wholeness, the creator, the divine, getting back to my relationship now. My mom and my dad always taught me when I was little that God would always forgive me for anything that I ever asked, you know, that he would never say no to me about anything that I needed to be forgiven for. But the only thing that he wouldn't forgive me for would be turning away from him. And I feel like what I've learned in loneliness this year is getting back to that relationship and realizing I had never forgotten anything in the first place. So that's what came up for me. I hope that makes sense, but thank you for this beautiful, beautiful room.
Beautiful, Doctor. Thank you very much for sharing. And that is a great perspective, to be able to look at something when we detach in the physical world as, okay, now I got an opportunity to go a little bit deeper inside. I think that's a great perspective. I want to thank you guys for coming up on stage. We're going to get to some, you know, David, Nicole, Karen, and Casey, Paula, what's going on? We're going to get to you in a moment. But Rishi, I do want to open up another avenue of this conversation as it's already unfolding in a beautiful way. You know, we talked about the soul having this separate kind of having some connection issues here. So I will ask my question quicker. You know, having this separateness and experiencing duality. So I guess, Rishi, a question I want to ask you is when we do have this aloneness, this time to ourselves or time to go inside, what could be some of the benefits of doing that, of taking alone time, separating ourselves, let's say, from society, from other pressures, from relationships, going inside? Rishi, what do you think could be some benefits or reasons we might want to do that?
Thank you, Antonio. You know, there's a lot of benefits of being alone for a moment in time. You don't have to end up being a monk like me, but I would definitely suggest spending some time by yourself. I remember when I first came to the ashram and I met my teacher, I was not a monk at this time. And there were many, many events that were constantly happening there, where thousands of people from all over the world would constantly come for these events. And there would be rituals and pujas and singing and dancing and glorification to the divine. And during this time, when I first came there, I would be constantly looking at the girls. I'd be constantly looking at them saying, oh, this one is attractive. Oh, this one is attractive. Oh, I want to be with this person. And my mind would start to create all types of fantasies about being with these people. And this was so strong for the first, I would say, month or 2 months, where I just could not even really go into the practices themselves. My mind was constantly taking me away. And we see this so much, right? Even when we go to a yoga studio, even when we do a practice, a lot of us, when we go in, we're looking at the people. Oh, who's this person? Oh, who's that person? Maybe I can be with them. Maybe I like them. So your mind is constantly starting to gravitate towards all of the external things and is not focused on the practice itself. And so this feeling of looking and fantasizing, not like even sexually, but just like relationship-wise, right? We all have these fantasies that, oh, what if I'm with that person? What if we go to Paris? What if we are on the Eiffel Tower? You know, all of these things that the mind tricks us to wanting to believe. And I was feeling like this, and I remember once my teacher came to me about 2 months later, and he says, "How are you?" And I said to him, "I feel so alone." Right? I feel so alone. And this aloneness was triggering me to look at everybody that would come and go and see if I want to be with them. But the main reason for that was that loneliness that I was feeling. And he smiled and he said, "That is good that you feel alone." So he did not say that it's a bad thing. He did not say you should not feel alone. He said, "It's a good thing that you feel alone. But take that loneliness and try and find the divine in that loneliness." So in that longing for loneliness, do your meditation practices, do your studies, walk the path. So just like if you were to go and trying to be with somebody, what would you do, right? You would buy them chocolates, you would buy them roses, you'd contemplate about where you want to take them for a movie. You'd maybe even write a song for them or a poem if you're very romantic. Of course, I don't know if that's how it works now. Maybe you just go on Tinder now, who knows? But you know, usually that's what you do. You spend a lot of time trying to build this relationship. So in the same way, use that loneliness to build a relationship with the divine. And by doing these practices, by connecting in that way, you find this wholeness that is so beautiful inside of you that you don't long for anything of this world anymore. And in that state, when you're in that state, then people will come in your life if it's meant to be. Then that person will come into your life. You will draw those people to you, and you two can grow together. But the beautiful thing about being in that state is that you're no more dependent on them. You're free. You're not a slave to the world. You're not a slave to the people. If they are with you, if they are not, if they come, they go, you are completely free. And that is the best place to have a relationship. I find it so amazing with people. You know, we become such slaves to others for our emotional dependence, for our emotional satisfaction. And as long as somebody has an ego, as long as they have the mind, they are unpredictable. Only a saint is somebody that is predictable because you know they will always do what is required to be of service to the higher society. But it doesn't matter who you are, as long as you have that mind, as long as you have that ego, you are unpredictable. At any moment, something can happen. You think you might love somebody, and then the next day you wake up and they leave you or they cheat on you. You become a slave to that. Then you get depressed and angry and sad. But when you're free inside of you, and then you are with somebody, what happens? You start to help each other to grow spiritually. You start to be there for each other, and you know if that person leaves tomorrow, it's okay. It's not going to make your world worse or better. It's just the way that life is. So to be alone is not the point. To be a monk is not the point. Strive to be with somebody if it's meant to be. But you have to firstly be good with yourself before you start to be with somebody else. Then you could have a real meaningful and relationship. So in that way, why is it important to be by yourself? Because in that loneliness, if turned inside rather than outside, gives you the energy to go deep into your spiritual path. It blocks away all fantasies and distractions and really allows you to connect to the path and to yourself. And from that state, you can start to build other relationships. So it's important you take that time, even for a little while, if you really want to have sustainable and meaningful relationships in your life. So I'll leave it at that.
Beautiful, Rishi. Thank you. Thank you very much for that share. And I totally agree. I think I look back at my, in my own life, and the most profound spiritual moments I've had were completely alone. There was an example. I was building a veranda, and I had it in my wood shop, and I'm there in the middle of the night, and I'm just sitting, working away, sewing, and building, and I go to put up, this certain portion of the design that I had made, and I started to feel what the owner was going to feel, and I had, and something came over me that was totally irrelevant to the design, and it was this feeling of all of the stuff that I had gone through in my life, the doubts that I had of, am I going to be an architect? Is this even the right thing? Why do I got this wood shop? All these questions and all this pressure that I had gone through before kind of opened up when I realized I needed to go through those trials, that times of being alone, the moments where I couldn't relate to anybody and no one wanted to talk to me, and then having this impact me in such a profound way to develop my own skills, to harness my talents, to then have this experience where it was in the middle of the night. No one was around. I was completely alone, yet I had this extremely profound experience in an internal way. So I think there is an extreme power to taking that time alone. And I want to ask some of our friends up here on stage, David. We got you up here. It's always a pleasure. And wanted to know, what are some benefits you've seen to being alone or having time alone, or what is your take on this?
Oh Lord, you got to me sooner than I thought. So, I've been taking a lot of notes here. I mean, this is such a profound topic. So I just want to thank everyone first and foremost for your presence. And I've been taking notes here. Rishi, I loved how you opened up with talking about the relationship between ego and soul. I thought that was quite profound. I'm gonna vote for you going back and saying that again for anyone that might have missed it. Michelle, loved your comment on spaciousness. My thought there was the paradox between creating more space actually creates more connection. And sometimes if we lose space, we actually lose or reduce spaciousness, we lose connection. So in terms of just the aloneness on the spiritual path, the thing that drew me in that first came up when I decided to join was this idea of is it possible to go so deep that you just become the crazy guy, riding around on an eagle around a mountain somewhere, because no one sort of understands you. You might be blissed out and elated, but you kind of lose that ability to connect with others. And this isn't like a concern, it's more of just sort of a funny thought. So I'm just sharing some feelings that come up when I think about aloneness on this spiritual path. I think one example that comes up is the recognition of paradoxes all over the place. Even this like idea of creating a finite from the infinite, so you can't experience the infinite without having a finite, seems to be strange at the least, and paradoxical at the most, in a sense. And so when I think about that, and I think about the relationship between the physical and the metaphysical, this is the thing that fascinates me the most. I think I threw this on my Instagram a couple of days ago, that really the spiritual path is, it's actually quite simple, and it's what Rishi, you had already clearly laid out, which is we are finite beings, yet we come from the infinite. So we are infinite beings having a finite experience, I think is the cleaner way to say it. And so then you come upon this point. So okay, well that's cool. So sort of what now? I think there's a comment that went something like, "Well, there's so much to sort of talk about here," which there is, and also at the same time, there's not. Again, kind of paradoxical, right? It's like there's so much to say. There's almost the more you say, the more you miss it, in a sense, because it's cliche, but words don't capture the essence of the infinite. Like we have close, at best, close approximations to describe the infinite. So loneliness on the spiritual path, I think this is kind of where my point's going, is you get to this realization that you're always just shy of the infinite in an earth plane sense, in a sort of physical body, using words, floating around in a meat suit around the sun kind of sense, that will sees all these pointers to the infinite and yet is bounded by physics and language and so on. And so on one hand, you just sit here in awe and you just say, wow, this is so amazing, because you can feel the essence of the infinite. You can feel the essence of, I think, Michelle, you said, the journey back to wholeness. And yet there is that nagging sense from the ego that, we are separate, or we feel separate. And then I love, Rishi, what you had said. And I think it's sort of in reaction, this is how I felt, that a lot of times say, the ego is the enemy. Or, and there's the book by Ryan Holiday, Ego is the Enemy. And initially I'm already kind of jerking at that, because I'm like, well, is it really? And so, Rishi, when you had said that the ego has a purpose, I was like, yes, exactly. It can't just be there as, you know, this, this antagonistic entity that just is always pulling us away from happiness. It's not, because as you said, Rishi, you know, it's all from the infinite. So, and it all has a purpose. And so the ego actually does serve as a pointer back to the infinite. So I think it's beautiful. And what you had said also, that it wants to be happy. The ego wants to be happy. The soul wants to be happy. So it's all seeking the same thing. So it's not really that separate. And yet, in order to understand that, you have to have a separateness, in a sense. Again, a paradox where I feel like I'm losing my mind. So thank you for having me. I'll pause there before I go down further the rabbit hole. So Antonio, Rishi, Michelle, Dr. Renee, thank you. Nicole, hey, good to see you again. So I'm David. I'm done speaking. Thank you.
Thank you, David. You know, the way that you could look at the ego is that it serves as a conduit to experience the divine from a dualistic perspective. So without the ego, we can never experience that side of the divine. We can never experience the dualistic side of the divine. Because the thing with the divine is that we only talk about it from a light perspective. But inside of the light also contains all of this duality, right? All of the worst things that you can think of in this world is only coming from the divine. So the ego helps us to have a fuller experience of the divine. But at some point, there comes a time when we must look to transcend it so we can once again go back to our true nature. And another thing that you mentioned was about if you become too alone, then you become crazy, right? You become the guy riding on an eagle. But as Antonio puts it, what do you say, Antonio? The dolphin?
Riding on a dolphin.
Riding on a dolphin, riding on an eagle. So there's a beautiful quote in the Bhagavad Gita. It says, what is night for all beings is actually a time of awakening for the self-controlled. And when all beings are awake, it is night for the enlightened one. So here it's literally saying, when you start to go on the spiritual path, the world will think that you're crazy, because you're going against the very nature of the world, which is to seek wholeness in the material world. And you are saying no, you're denying that. So you're going against the grain. So of course that's going to make you crazy. And of course you're going to think the people of the world are crazy. So in this quote, that is why it said, it is night for all beings. It's a time of awakening for the yogi. And when all beings are awake, it is night for the enlightened one. And so in this space, and you had mentioned that if you become too alone or too crazy, then it's hard to actually relate with the people. So I would argue that the only way to actually make a real connection is when you realize yourself. If not, it's just mental gymnastics. It's just the blind leading the blind. You're just going around in a circle. if you truly want to connect with someone, first get to know who you are. Then you can make a true connection. And so that's why a lot of times when you're a monk, you take time for yourself for many years. And then when you're ready, then you go out and start talking to the people. But when you start talking to them, you start talking that to them from a higher perspective. And that's where true connections can be made. So I would say, don't be afraid to be crazy. And also, don't be afraid to not be able to relate, because I think you'll be able to relate much more when you reach that higher states of consciousness. So I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, David and Rishi. And yeah, you know, I think that's something I thought about a lot as a youth as well, as getting too crazy, but actually enjoyed being an outcast. And I kind of used that as momentum to drive me forward. And apparently it's okay to ride on animals. So who knew? Karen, we do got you up here. And before we get into Karen, I do want to just thank everybody again. We have a pretty hot room tonight. I'm glad everybody had made it out. We're talking about being alone on the spiritual path, feeling alone. We got Rishi up on stage with us. He is a monk in the States. Again, he's starting an introduction to yogic philosophy class. If you'd like to join, he's going to start, you know, getting into some of the details and the fundamentals behind the stuff that he shares with us here on the Spirit Lounge. So there's a link at the top of the page if you want to click that and head on through. And if you want to, you know, get to our other rooms, I think Saturday we're having a pretty regular room. So if you head over to the Spirit Lounge, we'll let you know when that's going to be. And Karen, we got you up on stage. Always a pleasure. And I wanted to hear from you. You know, what have you learned, if you be so kind to share, from being alone, your experiences of aloneness?
Well, as a child, I was alone. I felt very alone, but I wasn't on the spiritual path. And I remember even, it might sound absurd, but I used to pray to wake up as another person, somebody who I went to school with, who I saw her as beautiful and popular and self-confident and all the things that I didn't see in myself. And all these years later, now I'm alone and I don't feel like I'm missing anything. And I've had a lot of experiences in between looking for happiness in all the wrong places. But my goodness, what I have learned. I used to think that happiness was having a full calendar. And now I think happiness is having an empty calendar. It leaves a lot of room for possibilities and things that my ego doesn't plan for. But I go out into the world sometimes, or even sitting at home. In the digital world, amazing things can happen that I can't anticipate. One of the things that I think is really hard now, I was thinking when I was a child, there was no social media. And I think it's even harder now for young people or people of any age who are fighting against this idea, even they may not realize it, but they're up against this idea that happiness is out there. It's an influencer. If you buy this, if you look like this, if you travel here, if you have this kind of relationship, and it must be overwhelming to pull away from that and go within when everybody around you is going outside, going without, but going outside. Now I have a thought there, it just disappeared. Oh, so when I felt the need to be in a relationship, and if I would go out in the world, it was almost like I was unconsciously searching. Oh, what about that person? Oh, what about that person? Oh, I like the way they look. Oh, I like the way they talk. Oh, I like this. Oh, I like that. And now what's so beautiful, and I can't even tell you how this happened. It happened by grace. Over the last few years, where I really started to find a peace in myself. So now when I go out into the world, I'm not looking for anything, and then I'm open to anything. I'm open to conversations, I'm open to synchronicities, I'm open to all kinds of things that happen without any planning, without any searching. It's almost like they come to me. And I just finished Rishi's class, and I highly recommend it. And he was talking about four stages of relationships, and in the fourth stage, there's two people who have been together for, well, I don't know how long, but anyway, they're together and they have so much love, and not like an ego-based love, but they share such a vast love that that people who encounter them want to be in their presence. And I think we can do that as individuals too. We can, as we cultivate this relationship with our own divine nature, people feel that when we're in contact with them, and all kinds of wonderful things happen. So I thank you for listening. Thank you, Rishi. Thank you, Antonio. It's lovely to see Dr. Renee and Michelle again. It's been a very long time. And with that, I am incompletely complete. Thank you.
Beautiful, Karen. Thank you for sharing, as always. And we're going to jump around. What's going on, Regina? See you up here. We're going to jump around a little bit, but I do think we'll have time to get to everybody. Paula, you know, we got you up on stage, and would just like to ask you a similar question. You know, what are some things that you feel like you've learned or takeaways from this idea of feeling alone, you know, on the spiritual path?
Thank you, Antonio, and hi, Rishi. So I can speak to this from, I guess, a different perspective, not so much in personal relationships, but I think this resonates with me in the area where I do a lot of volunteer work, and a lot of the service that I provide is with helping animals and doing advocacy for animals. And I guess when I started doing this, it was something I just came upon on my own, started to learning about, you know, all the things that happens to animals in our daily lives, you know, how that connects to me. And the more I learned, the more I changed my actions and I made different choices. And I didn't realize this was actually connecting me more, you know, with my spirituality, more consistency with what I believed in different realms of my life. And the more I've done it, because I do advocacy, I speak to a lot of people, I do street activism, I do different types of outreach with health, because that's my background. And so in having these conversations with people, many times it does feel very alone. I have a good community because there are a lot of people who are similarly animal advocates, and I found connection there. But because I do spend so much time doing the advocacy with people who don't yet understand what I'm trying to explain or the message I'm trying to relay for the animals on their behalf, it can feel very alone sometimes, because I'm talking to, you know, just a lot of people, and they don't immediately see what I'm trying to explain or what I'm trying to show or the connections I'm trying to make. And so that can be very alone. Like, it could feel like, wow, like, I'm just doing this all by myself. Like, why don't they get it? And like, it can very much feel that way. And I've been doing this, you know, underlying, like, I'm vegan, and I've been vegan now for over 10 years. And I've been doing advocacy for several years. And in the beginning, I really felt it like, wow, this is really hard to be, you know, the only one. This is speaking back to when you guys were talking about feeling like the crazy person, right? But what happened is, like, over time, I just became more secure in the message and understanding what it is that I'm advocating for. You know, being this consistency, the kindness to animals, this is something that people generally agree with, but it's just there's a disconnect between the actions every day. So the more that I did the advocacy, the more I realized that, yeah, I could be the only person in the room who's advocating for the animals. But it really just makes it more special and more important to me, because if I weren't there, I wouldn't, no one would be doing it. And so for the animals, I feel that's, that makes a difference between life and death for them. So for me, what it's done is just really made it more powerful for me, like the purpose, and has really aligned a lot of my practices, because I know we're talking when we talk about like yoga and meditation, these are things that people easily, you know, just translate into a practice, a daily practice. And I see these other choices I make, like the food that I eat, who I would choose to eat to have hurt for me. And I choose not to take part in that, obviously. I feel that is a daily practice. And so by just following through with this, being consistent with these decisions that I'm making, with the food I eat, the products I buy, these things that are daily practices for me, makes me feel completely more spiritual, consistent, and aligned. And even though it can feel alone sometimes, it really just makes me appreciate it so much more, and understand the importance of and the value of the message from the animal. So that's what I wanted to share with everyone. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Paola. You brought up a good point. You know, there's a joke that says, you do know the difference between a cult and a world religion. So the difference between a cult and a world religion is the amount of people. So once more and more people come into something, then it becomes accepted, then it becomes the norm. But you always require one or two crazy people to go outside of the grain to make a change. And so a lot of times in the Gita, once again, I'll reference, it states there, among thousands of people, perhaps one strives to walk the spiritual path. Even among those who strive to walk the spiritual path, only one may know the divine. And among those who know the divine, maybe only one knows the divine in truth. So this path is not a path that is people are going to just automatically resonate with, right? Being a vegetarian is not something that they're automatically going to resonate with. But if it's something that you believe to be the truth, then keep going and the truth will eventually prevail. That's why it said the unreal can never come into being and the real never ceases to be. So the truth never ceases to be. It's always there. And so if you truly believe it to be the truth, keep fighting, keep pushing that service on to the rest of the people. And if it resonates, then people will join you, but it will take time because that's just how this world works. So thank you for your share.
Thank you, Paula, and thank you, Rishi, as well. Regina, we got you up on stage, and it's been a little while, so I'd love to hear from you on your thoughts about being alone, on the spiritual path throughout your life, and maybe some things that you've learned or some takeaways from being alone. The mic is all yours.
Thanks, Antonio. Thank you, and thank you to Rishi, to both of you, for having me up on stage. It's feels wonderful to be amongst like-minded people and people who are thinking about and just pondering the same sort of things. 2 years ago, when we got into lockdown, I actually went into a place of actually trusting the unknown. And for me, it was actually an opportunity for me to step back from the roles that I was playing in these, in our material worlds. And I actually welcomed the opportunity to go in and rest from all of that busyness outside. And very much like, I think it was David who had said it, that, not too long after that, as I dove deeper into a spiritual practice, which I did, other people around me actually called me crazy. And I never felt crazy. I felt more grounded. I didn't want to get caught up in the hubbub and the fear of all the hullabaloo of what was going on when we all went into lockdown. I wanted to actually get more centered. I wanted to fine-tune my receptiveness to what the divine in nature had for me. So nowadays, So I feel very much that I had that opportunity, and I'm thankful that I had that sense and that intuition to go in. And when I do feel alone, I just remember that it's just temporary. I know that it's just a feeling that's temporary, that's as a human being experiencing an emotion that a human being would feel. I just remember, and I actually look up, like today, I was thinking about this today on my walk with my dog. I just looked up at the sky and I just remembered that I'm not alone, that I'm part of all of this, and we are all together. Now, while me as a person who is single and is wondering if I'm going to have a man in my life again sometime in the future, those are questions that I allow to happen, but I also accept my karma and, you know, accept that I've had like some very significant relationships in the past, and that perhaps that my acceptance of my karma now is just where I need to be right now. And just, I think the main lesson that I've learned is just to surrender to the divine and to nature. So, and if other people around me, my friends, aren't as connected or as centered in their spiritual path, someone said this to me once, that everybody blossoms in their own way and at their own time. And so when I feel a little disconnect to my friends, that's what I just remember. I remember that everybody's blossoming at their own time. We all have our seasons, and that, you know, they connect with me as much as they possibly can, and we're still friends. So that's all I've got. Thank you for asking me to come up there.
Hi, Regina. Thank you so much for your share. And also thank you for organizing my talk in LA. It was super nice of you. So thank you for your service and your seva.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Regina. I think it's a good point you make about having these different rates of blooming that, you know, tying into this craziness topic, which I think is part of the alone topic, is that I realized for myself as well that I was a late bloomer, that a lot of things would take me a while to mature into, to really hold and to be able to discuss or share or implement in my own life. And I was in a way comparing myself to other stages that others have gone through and was like, I'm behind. Oh no. You know, oh no, I'm too far ahead. I can't relate. I need to back up. And I, you know, not taking into this full account that we all are on our own time, and that by being alone, I was able to get closer to understanding my own time. Really beautiful point, Regina. Thank you for that. We do got some other friends up on stage. I want to keep rolling. Nicole, we got you up here next. And we just want to hear, you know, just keep in mind that we got three others we'd like to get to as well. Some of your experiences about being alone and maybe one or two takeaways that you've had from that.
Oh, thank you, Antonio. Thank you, Rishi, for pulling me up on stage. Hi, Michelle, Paula. Hello, David, everyone here. Firstly, of course, Rishi and Antonio, your name's popping up on my screen and I'm in the room 100%. But then the topic itself, feeling alone on the spiritual path, this is something truly that I've been grappling with probably the past couple of months. And Rishi, there were so many things that you've shared that I've just been like, yes, yes. And after every person share, it's just expanded and expanded. And I completely agree. We are never truly alone. Like what Michelle said at the start, we are never truly alone. We have ancestors, guides, angels all here, the divine here in support always for us. And though I resonated a lot with what Regina just shared as well, because I feel like for where I'm at spiritually, and for where I see my path, like I'm in complete service to the divine, right? This is my life's purpose. This is what I'm doing. This is why I am here, is to share that knowledge, to share all the information that comes through, and the love. And most definitely there are people in my life or my family that think I am crazy, you know, although I've never, exactly like what you're saying, Regina, I've never felt more grounded, I've never felt more centered, I've never felt more real in my life. It's like service, decided to take or that has been calling to me. And I think that key point of, you know, seeing where others are at and loving them for it and seeing them as the divine incarnate as they are in that moment, and seeing that my path is mine and theirs is theirs. And whether there is a partner put into my life, this has been that question where it's like, well, is this a life of service, or is there room for someone else in there? Because my heart is full of love. Like, I do feel this love complete from the divine, and there is none of that external driving force, like not looking outside of myself for that validation, or, you know, not needing that materialistic world, or there's none of that drives my life anymore. And I guess when we speak of it being a lonely path, sometimes we do have to really dig deep within and just be like, this is my life and this is the life of service, and my heart is full of love. And yeah, I'm so excited for what unfolds, because I know it's only going to be magic. Although there is still that human part of me that is like, well, when we've chosen this life, like, is it that solo life? Is it like like Rishi the monk, or like being of service to God? Or, you know, there is that part of me that's like, I wonder if this is my life. But there's no judgment or fear around it. It is more just that. That was the takeaway I got from it, with that lonely path, more so being of service and questioning if that's just the role that I have. You know, I feel very much deeply in my feminine side. There's none of that shutting down. My heart is wide open always for all. And I love the share before about just, I think it was Karen that was saying, you know, there's never any expectation. You go into every situation with your heart wide open, just seeing the joy or having the childlike sense of wonder around who you're meeting or where the conversation could lead. But at the end of the day, we are still having the human experience. So I just love these rooms. I'm quite happy to sit here and listen. But yeah, it's always amazing to be in your space. So thank you for having me. My name is Nicole.
Thank you, Nicole, for your share. Beautiful insights. One thing that I would say is that, you know, you had mentioned a life of service. It's important to also understand you can have a life of service, you can have a life of love, also in a relationship. There are many, many great saints, many, many great yogis that were actually in a relationship with somebody else and had children, but they were not attached to that relationship, right? But they were in a relationship and they loved that other person, and it was a beautiful thing to experience. But you don't become attached to it. When I was in LA, there was a person, a guy that was driving me around and helping to do certain things as service. And he was with me for 4 or 5 days. And he has a girlfriend. And after 4 or 5 days, the girlfriend wrote to me and says, you know, I don't like when you come here. Whenever he is with you, he wants to become a monk and he wants to break up with me, and I don't like that he hangs around with you. And
I'll hang out with you.
And I was like, okay, interesting. You know, firstly, just, you know, the comment was so rude. You know, it's just like, you usually don't really write those types of messages to like a rishi or a swami. But I was like, okay, I'll let it go, because what I noticed in her was that all of her discrimination was gone. Because what happened? Energetically, she felt a declutching happen. Energetically, she felt like, okay, this ego that is attached to me and I'm attached to it, she felt that it was kind of removing itself from her. And the thing is, I never told him that he should be a monk. I actually encouraged him to continue to be in that relationship, but not to become attached to it, right? Not to make it a slave. And in that way, that he'll have a much more meaningful relationship with the person. But the other person completely saw it from a different perspective, that this monk has come and is trying to convince others that they should be monks also. which is definitely not the case. So it's just an important note to make that being in a relationship, you can definitely have a life of service, but it's about that attachment to that person, which draws you away from really stepping into your service. So thank you, Nicole, for your share.
Beautiful point, Nicole and Rishi, and thank you for that little tidbit. That is a very hilarious DM, I'm sure, to get on a travel. And thank you, everybody, for coming out. This is the Spirit Lounge. We got Rishi up on stage. You've been hearing from him. Check the link at the top of the page if you want to go a little bit deeper. And I'm going to keep on rolling. We are at about an hour, so this is generally where we reach the dawn, but I want to make sure we get to Casey, Miranda, and we got Kumar up here. It's been a while since we've seen you as well. So Casey, if you have anything you want to share, maybe a question about this idea of, you know, something that you've learned from being alone.
Yeah, I was originally thinking of just having some sort of less personal kind of share of, you know, like, loneliness can kind of be good because it's like a good sign that you're seeking for something more, that you're, you know, fed up with whatever the circumstances of the world are. But, you know, I thought I would maybe share something a little more personal in case it sort of resonated with other people. And that's, even though, like, I've gone through a lot of different times in my life that have been either very depressing or even to the point of like suicidal, or just it always had like a, I would say like a heat to it. There was still some sort of like fire or passion or anger or something involved in it. And even when I'd be at kind of my lowest lows, I'd be upset. Or I would be, you know, upset with some circumstance of life, or I'd be sad, or there would still be some kind of like energy in that feeling. And it would still kind of have like a life of its own. And sometimes even, you know, it felt good almost to, you know, entertain certain negative thoughts and to, you know, entertain like being a victim or different things. But I think there was this transition point where I got fed up enough with a lot of the things of the world, because I felt like I had achieved certain things in life, that I thought would bring me happiness. And when they didn't, there was this sort of point of surrender where, however much I tried, no matter what, nothing ever fully fulfilled. And that sort of depression that I got into when I realized like how unhappy I was once I took off all the layers that we go through in life, of all the things that we're desiring, you know, want money and relationships and a good job and good friends and stuff. And when you pull all of those over, like, that loneliness underneath didn't have the same energy as like the depression I would go into and the disappointments I would have in life, because there was always be like some anger or sadness. This was just like a complete numbness, and it almost felt like I was already dead. It just felt like I was a complete zombie with no will, no motivation, no nothing. I just felt so like, yeah, literally I just felt dead. And, you know, Rishi, maybe similar to you, where you talked to your guru and I talked to my spiritual mentor about it, and I said, look, I feel this way. I feel dead. I don't even feel, you know, anything. And he was like, that's so good. And I was like, what? How are you telling me that right now? But the point where I let that be okay and just sort of surrendered to it, and then started thinking of, okay, well, instead of what do I want out of life, what does life want out of me? And how can I no longer be trying to say, what can I do with my life? It's more of like, what seva can I perform with my time and my life? And after that transition, I would say the amount of loneliness I've had in my life after going through that has dramatically decreased. I still let my desires and stuff get in here sometimes, and it still kind of messes me up. But sometimes facing that like deepest loneliness that we have inside of ourselves and surrendering to it and just letting it be okay, being like, if this is my life from here on out, so be it. If I have to live the rest of my days as a zombie, so be it. And then that's when it improves. So that's my share, and I'm done.
Thank you, Casey, for that share. That was a really beautiful insight in so many different ways. You know, you mentioned a few things that I think people should really reflect on. One is that when you go into that space, it's also important in that space that you don't beat yourself up. Like, oh, I'm lonely. I accept it. I'm a terrible person. I'm just going to sit in my basement and not go out and order fast food every day. No, that's not the type of loneliness that we're talking about. Because the ego has an amazing way to make you think that you are a saint and to also make you think you're a terrible person. But when the ego makes you think you're a saint, don't believe it. And when the ego makes you think you're a terrible person, also don't believe it. And so a lot of times the ego takes you all the way to the other side where you just close off. And that's not what being alone on the spiritual path means. It's important to get to that state of just being alone and accepting it. But then from that moment, you must strive to feel whole again. But understanding that wholeness is not coming from the world, but from within yourself. So if you don't make that effort, if you don't strive, then that also will take you deeper into the ego. So you said one word, service. In Sanskrit, it's called seva. This is one of the most important things to do. When you're alone, help others, serve others. And I'm telling you, just that simple act itself of always trying to find opportunities to serve will make you feel so complete and whole. It'll be shocking. So thank you for that insight, Casey.
Thank you, Casey. I think you home runned it when you said, you know, getting out of the way of what do I want from life and asking what does life want from me? I think that is a very beautiful point, tying into something that a lot of people have brought up, this surrendering to life and being okay with the alone, being okay with that, going inwards and developing ourselves. Beautiful share. We next up, Miranda, I'd like to ask you if you'd have anything you'd like to share, perhaps a question. The mic is yours.
Thank you, Antonio. Thank you, Rishi. I'm going to try to make this really fast. I want to save space for Kumar, and I know we're running out of time. Spiritual path, of course, it's been, you felt a lot of times alone, you know, being a vegetarian, starting meditation, changing a lot of things about habits, definitely felt alone. But I think Dr. Renee said this earlier, where she said this is her year of really coming into embracing being alone and being okay with it. And I have definitely embraced that this year. And it's just been so beautiful and so transformational. And I just want to share this really quick. And I hope it resonates with someone, especially ladies. I just feel like sometimes it's interesting and different for women to be alone. And what I mean is, like, yes, spiritually, or like some of the women have touched on, you know, relationships, but also like traveling on your own, eating in a restaurant by yourself, things like that. So anyways, it's a poem by Rupi Kaur, and it just says, I will never have this version of me again, so let me slow down and be with her. And that just is such a beautiful point of, you're not going to get this time back, so just slow down and be with yourself, and enjoy it and love yourself. So thank you. I'm done speaking.
Beautiful, Miranda. Thank you, as always. Kumar, is there anything you would like to share while we have you up here?
Thank you, Tonio, for this room, and thank you also, Rishi, for bringing me up. This morning, I woke up at around 3:30, and I was doing my regular things and also meditating for a while. While I meditate, many things come up in my mind, but then there was a particular thing that came up, and then normally I write them down if I think it can be useful. And what I wrote was, everything will go wrong until you find yourself. And the best way to do so is to be alone. When you shall find yourself, you will find everyone and everything. And then only everything will fall into the right places. And then I joined this room later in the morning, and I'm saying that Rishi is saying the same things. So in life, we always look for validations. Even when we're looking for like-minded people, we are looking for validations. And even when we're looking for the like-minded people, we are deviating away from being alone, because many times we want to feel part of a group. And then the whole thing, the whole circle goes around again, of being part of a group, and then again, we tend to deviate from being alone, in solitude, which is not equal to become lonely. And we restart the whole process. But then that can be good in the initial, in the beginning stages, but then we have to realize that later we also have to move away from this group, because the whole purpose is not to be part of a group, but then to be alone in solitude, where we can find our true self and our true purpose. So this is a very tricky thing. We have a deep desire to feel connected with other people, and most of our actions, our karmas, are in trying to connect ourselves. And while trying to connect ourselves, we lose ourselves. So this is some of the insights I had while I'm listening to you. Thank you very much for this room.
Thank you, Kumar. And that's a beautiful point about the kind of circularness of getting into these moments of aloneness, and like Casey brought up, these moments of going really deep into our understanding of what we are and how we feel, and then wanting to also connect and build a community. And there is value to both sides. It's good to kind of play the balance. Thank you for sharing. I want to say thank you, everybody, for coming up here and sharing. And again, this is the Spirit Lounge. Feel free to head over, follow the page. We're going to have a room on Saturday around 1:30 Eastern Standard Time. And all this talk had reminded me of a quote that I want to read very slowly, because it's a short quote, from one of the great architects in the modern world, Luis Barragan, from Mexico. And he won one of the first Pritzker Prize, which is the equivalent of like a Nobel Prize in architecture. And he said these two things, which was very interesting for someone as an architect. We don't always connect this. He made two points about silence and solitude. He said, in silence, in the gardens and homes designed by me, I have always endeavored to allow for the interior, placid murmur of silence in my fountains. Silence sings. Solitude. Only in intimate communion with solitude may man find himself. Solitude is good company, and in my my architecture is not for those who fear or shun it. So I want to say Thank you for coming out. Rishi, as always, I want to leave you with the last word. We jumped all over the place tonight from being alone, from why does the soul kind of want to experience duality, have this separate experience as opposed to always knowing that it is the fullness. And then we jumped into many, many different topics around being alone, the benefits of it, the downsides sometimes that we have of it, how we relate to others, our internal world. So I just wanted to leave some space at the end here. Rishi, if you had any final thoughts or any, takeaways that we could have from this topic, I want to give you the last word, Rishi.
Thank you, Antonio, and thank you for everybody that came up and contributed. I really enjoy and look forward to these rooms because it really does feel like a community, a sangha. And, you know, as we talk about the importance of being alone and not being attached to people, I've spent many years just being alone, not around anybody. And I spent many years as a monk also being around a community. And to be honest with you, being around a community is actually really beautiful. A community that understands why we're walking this path, that it is there to support. So when we talk about feeling alone, that does not mean that you shouldn't seek a spiritual community. A spiritual community can really help support and uplift you. And I think with everything that we discussed, there isn't much more to add. I'll just leave it at the same three things that I usually say after every room. If you're feeling really, really lonely, do service, seva. Do your meditation practice, sadhana. And seek a spiritual community, sangha. And if you can do those three things, I promise you will start to feel much more whole and complete inside of you. And you won't be dependent on anybody for that. So with that, have a wonderful night and much love. Take care.
Thank you, Rishi. And thank you, everybody, for coming out. As I said, feel free to look out for the Spirit Lounge on Saturday and enjoy the rest of your day/night. Ciao.
Thank you all so much.